Da-dee. Da-so-da-na-da-na-pra-cha-cha-na-da-na-ja-na. Just so the nandana brajajana ranjana. Jamuna tiravana jadi. Jamuna tiravana jadi. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Adi. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Adi. Pijana bala pa giri buddha dhadi. Gopijana bala pa giri buddha dhadi. Jasodhanandana Brajajanaranjana. Jasodhanandana Brajajanaranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Jadi. Jamuna Tiravana Jadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Adi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Adi. Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Hari Vidakacharya Astatara Satasi Simadhi Divine Grace Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Gaur Premanandi. Nice to be with you all on a Sunday feast program here in Alachua. I've spent a whole, some of you may not know because you're from distant places, but I've spent a whole week here in Alachua and it's been very lovely, very lively, and everyone's been keeping me really engaged. It's nice. So this evening is a verse from Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, text number 22, if you want to look it up, or here's the verse on the screen. 13:22. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Purushak prakritisto hi. Bhukte prakriti jan gunan. Karanam guna sangosya. Sad asad yoni janmaso. One more time. Purushak prakritisto hi. Bhukte prakriti jan gunan. Karanam guna sangosya. Sad asad yoni janmaso. And I don't know what your procedure is, but I think I'll just go on to read the word for word as I like. I don't know what I like. I like what you like. That's what I like. My understanding is there's some, along with the many experienced devotees, there's some newer devotees. And so I'll be primarily speaking to the newer devotees. And commonly what we do when we give Bhagavad Gita classes or any scripture class, there's response, others chant the verse. Let's do that. Someone from the men's side and a couple from the ladies' side will say the verse. Purusha prakritisto hi. Bhunkte prakriti janganan. Karanam guna sangosya. Sat asat yoni janmasu. Purusha prakriti stohi. Bhukte prakriti janmasu. Karanam guna sangosya. Purushaha, the living entity. Prakritista, being situated in the material energy. He, certainly, bhunkte, enjoys. Prakriti jan, produced by the material nature. Gunan, the modes of nature. Karanam, the cause. Gunasangaha, the association with the modes of nature. Asya, of the living entity. Sat asat, in good and bad. Yoni, species of life. Janmaso, in births. Translation, the living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse is very important for an understanding of how the living entities transmigrate from one body to another. It is explained in the second chapter that the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another just as one changes dress. The change of dress is due to his attachment to material existence. As long as he is captivated by this false manifestation, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another due to his desire to lord it over the material nature. He is put into such undesirable circumstances. Under the influence of material desire, the living entity is born, sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a man, sometimes as a beast, sometimes as a bird, as a worm, as an aquatic, as a saintly man, as a bug. This is going on. And in all cases, the living entity thinks himself to be the master of his circumstances, yet he is under the influence of material nature. Paragraph. How he is put into such different bodies is explained here. It is due to association with different modes of nature. One has to rise, therefore, above the three material modes and become situated in the transcendental position that is called Krishna consciousness. Unless one is situated in Krishna consciousness, his material consciousness will oblige him to transfer from one body to another because he has material desires since time immemorial. But he has to change that conception. That change can be effected only by hearing from authoritative sources. The best example is here. Arjuna is hearing the science of God from Krishna, the living entity. If he submits to this hearing process, he will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature, and gradually and proportionately, as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. In a Vedic mantra, it is said that as he becomes learned in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he proportionally relishes his eternal blissful life. So particularly for those of you in the category of newer guests or devotees, I thought a nice way to describe this little message is to give a little mini overview of Bhagavad Gita. Mini, like super mini. So in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita is chapter 1. And in chapter 1 of Bhagavad Gita, there's the scene of a battle about to begin, and Krishna has taken the position that he won't fight in the battle, but he has agreed to become the chariot driver, the servant, the chauffeur, the limousine guy that takes the car from this place to that place. And the person that's the passenger is in charge. Although he's in charge, he's taking the position of the subordinate to Arjuna. So Arjuna makes a request, please draw the chariot between the two armies. He sees the two armies and basically says, yikes. No, I can't do this because, and gives ethical reasons, very compelling sounding reasons why I can't go through with this. And he drops his bow and says, I shall not fight. So that's it. End of Bhagavad Gita, right? But he understands something else, that Krishna desires this to happen. So he the end of chapter 1 is he asks Krishna, what should I do? I'm in a dilemma. What's best for me to do? So please instruct me. In other words, he's taking the position, although you're my chariot driver, I accept you as my guru, so you please instruct me. What should I do in this circumstance? And that sets the stage for chapter 2. And in chapter 2, there's two main sections. One section is in Sanskrit. Those of you that are newer, you don't necessarily need to know the Sanskrit term, but it's Sankhya. Sankhya, one way of describing what Sankhya is, it's the analysis of categories of matter, analysis of categories of spirit, and we belong to the category of spirit. We don't belong to the category of matter. We're spirit. We're spirit soul. We're not the body. We're not the coverings of the soul. And then the second half is, how do you live your life that way? That's a nice idea. How do you live your life that way? So that's another kind of yoga called buddhi. Buddhi means intelligence. So how do you direct your activities of life in that direction, away from I'm the body direction to the I'm spirit soul direction? Buddhi yoga. That's chapter 2. And then furthering that message is chapter 3, where the primary teaching is karma yoga. That is, working in that consciousness without attachment to the fruits or the results of your work. Karma yoga. Work without attachment to the fruits of your work. Without attachment. Continuing to do your what is natural for you to do, your prescribed duties, without attachment to the result. And how is that? You offer the result to the Supreme. There is a result, and it belongs to the Supreme, so you offer it to the Supreme. Karma Yoga, Chapter 3. Keeping it really simple. Chapter 4. Then, beyond, once that detachment from work becomes accomplished, then one has the capacity to understand knowledge, transcendental knowledge, in a more refined manner. So Gyan Yoga, Gyan, knowledge, yoga of knowledge. And then summarizing action in Krishna consciousness, and then chapter 6, Dhyan Yoga. So you get the picture. There's like, this description is a yoga ladder, starting here and going up the yoga ladder. And meditation, focused meditation upon the Supreme in life. And then there's the final statement at the end of chapter 6. Look at this. We've just done 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. The best of all, the topmost of all yoga systems is bhakti. And it's, bhakti is simple. It's what the mind does and what the body does. And that's the last verse. So then Krishna describes bhakti in 6 chapters. The middle 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita is how to perform bhakti yoga. And in the middle, or in chapter 7 of that series, is another Sankhya section. Note, chapter 2, now again in chapter 7, some categories of matter and categories of spirit. We belong to the category of spirit, and then there's description of the categories of matter, a little more elaborate than found in chapter 2. And now we're ready for chapter 13. The final 6 chapters. And that's what this verse is. So it's a undergraduate, graduate, and postgraduate study of systems of matter and spirit, and we belong to the category of spirit. And that's what's in the verse. Purusha and Prakriti. Matter, it's spirit, first spirit, Purusha and Prakriti. Spirit and matter. And the living entity belongs to the category of Purusha, or literally, Purusha means the enjoyer, and that which is enjoyed by the enjoyer is Prakriti. Purusha, Prakriti. Enjoyer, enjoyed. Matter and spirit. Or spirit, rather, spirit and matter. Purusha, Prakriti sta. Sta means situated in. Living entity, Purusha, is situated in Prakriti. Purushi Prakriti sto. He just certainly. So living entity is situated in Prakriti. And there's a reason why. Purusha Prakriti sto he. Bhunkte. Bhunkte means enjoy. I want to enjoy. So, okay, here is an arrangement. You can be the imitation Purusha and try to be the enjoyer of Prakriti. Here you go. Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan. This way we're situated in material nature. Purushak Prakriti Stohi Bhunte Prakriti Jan Gunan. Karanam. Karana is means causation. Karana Guna Sangha. Sangha means association. Like this is a Sangha of Vaishnavas. So Guna Sangha is association with the Gunas, or the modes of material nature. So within the material nature, there's three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And one chooses one or the other or combination. And thus there's variety in this mature world because of the combination of the varieties of gunas and varieties of karma. Guna karma vibhagasha. So back to the verse. Purusha prakatistohi bhunkte prakati janganan karanam guna sangosha sad asad yoni janmasu. Now sad means it exists, and asat means it doesn't exist. That's the literal meaning. So there's additional meaning, but that which exists is sat. That which doesn't exist is asat, or appears to exist, but it, now you see it, now you don't. It doesn't really exist. It only appears to exist, like a reflection. Reflection appears to exist. So here's an apple, and here is a mirror. And in the mirror, you can see the reflection of the apple, but there's no substance in the reflection of the apple. You can't get any nourishment from that reflection. It's just, but it looks just like the apple, but there's no substance. And you turn the mirror a little bit, the apple just went away. The reflection just went away because there's no substance. It's asat. It appears to be, but it's not what it appears to be. So that's the material world. It's a reflection of something. And that something that it's a reflection of is reflection of sat. And the sat is the spiritual reality. And then there's a reflection of the spiritual reality that appears to be like the spiritual reality, but it's not the spirit. It's not reality. It appears to be. And that's one of the literal meanings of sat and asat. The way that Srila Prabhupada has chosen to translate and bring into the word-for-word translation is good and bad, sat and asat. So the verse is saying that we're the cause of our good fortune and ill fortune. If you want to know why bad things may be happening, you look at yourself, because we're the cause of behind the good fortune, or behind the ill fortune or bad fortune is something that a choice that we made for association with the modes of nature. And the choice of mode of goodness leads to some good fortune. It may lead. And then choice of something in the darker modes of nature leads to misfortune. But behind the good fortune, ill fortune is a choice that we made. We're the architects of our good fortune, ill fortune. And that the way that Srila Prabhupada has described in his purport, this verse is expanding on an understanding from chapter 2 that the soul transmigrates from this situation to the next situation to the next situation, one body to another body, or let's say little baby's body, the little boy's body, and young man's body, and an old man's body, and you know what comes after that? Death. So those transformations of body through the course of time has everything to do with the movements of time, but also the particular modes of nature with which we associate good fortune, ill fortune. And this life, and then the next life, and then the next life. So different forms of life, different species of life, different coverings. Prabhupada is using this metaphor from chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita, the dress or the covering of the soul, and different coverings, different dresses. There's a verse in chapter 2 that indicates that specifically. We just change dresses. But there's something that's unchanging through all of that changing, and that's the soul. And the process of spiritual realization is to less identify with the changing, the temporariness of existence, and focus instead on the eternal feature of existence, the sat feature of existence. And the whole of Bhagavad Gita, in those different steps or rungs on the yoga ladder, are to bring one closer and closer and closer to spiritual reality and away from the unending, since time immemorial, feature of transmigration or reincarnation or moving from one body to another body in this life and the next life and the next life. And there's literally, as far as time is concerned, it's beginningless and it's endless. In other words, others say the same thing negatively. There's sometimes an idea that eventually all souls will return to their original position. Just a matter of time. But according to the indication of Bhagavad Gita, souls can take birth endlessly. And then when there's cosmic annihilation, they're in a resting state, and then again, they resume where they left off. It's like going to sleep and you wake up. Okay, this is who I am, and this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm Mr. So-and-so, and this is my duties in life, and I do my duties in life because I'm Mr. So-and-so. So at the beginning of creation, and then the periods of time as the creation moves on, there's this sense of obligation or duty or fulfillment of desire according to the modes of nature with which we've been associating. And it goes on and on, endlessly. The lesson of Bhagavad Gita is to recognize that situation, the conundrum of repeated birth and death, and to take another choice. Or by the applying the principles of yoga to, instead of associating with the modes of nature, karanam guna sangosya, to associate with the Supreme. And through different systems of yoga to associate with the Supreme, culminating in the Bhakti Yoga system as is outlined in Bhagavad Gita. So go back. And the Sankhya system found in the very beginning of chapter 2, then again in chapter 7, then again here in chapter 13, it's a foundation. It's a system of knowledge, understanding what's going on, instead of just being moved by what's going on, understand what's going on, step outside of what's going on to understand who we are, instead of the force of material nature that's moving us from one position to the next position. And it's not only it's possible, it's the intention behind Bhagavad Gita to terminate that cycle, the unbroken, beginningless cycle of birth and death in the material world, and come again to our original position. Original position meaning, as Prabhupada is indicating explicitly here in the purport, Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means in as an alternative to being conscious of matter only, the coverings of matter and the configuration of matter today, like it was, it's raining today. And that was kind of a relief because it's been really hot. But there's nothing we can do. It's raining, it's raining. But, you know, there's transformation, there's production within material nature that comes from rain. So there's the point is, there's varieties of what we're experiencing, and what we're experiencing at this moment, wait a while. The time and everything will move, it'll become something else and something else, and life is, material life is just the experience of what that new configuration of duality is at the moment. And then making choices and continuing on indefinitely, making material choices to be the enjoyer, the bhunkte, prakriti jan gunan, the enjoyer of material nature. That's our material existence. And the yoga system is to understand that, step out of it, look at it, be detached from it, and direct consciousness instead to the Supreme. And ultimately that place of shelter is the extending consciousness to the Supreme through love and devotion. And it's very practical, and it's very important to understand. So I want to just add two things, because I want to end and allow time for discussion, because after all, this is a Lhachwa. My experience is the best part, the robust part of any class is the discussion part, and you all Lhachwa devotees are really good at it. So because coming up soon, as we heard the announcements, is Krishna Janmashtami, Balaram's appearance day, Krishna's appearance day, Krishna Janmashtami. Now, we honor Srila Prabhupada or any representative of Krishna and Balaram because they're delivering that message. And by delivering the message, like Bhagavad Gita as it is, they're delivering Krishna. The people who receive this gift from our founder Acharya or the disciplic succession or anyone representing Krishna, the gift is Krishna, that connection with reality as opposed to the sojourn of material existence lifetime after lifetime. That's the gift. So we honor our founder Acharya and those that engage in themselves in the same way we honor such Vaishnavas. And Balaram's appearance day, that's coming next. And Balaram is the original spiritual master from whom all other spiritual masters derive their capacity to deliver Krishna, because that's what Balaram wants to do also. So these little deeper understanding of what Balaram's appearance day means in practical terms, but he wants to give Krishna. And we're honoring him because of his position in relation to Krishna and his giving of Krishna to us and empowering Prabhupada and other teachers to give Krishna to us. And that's all part of this bigger picture of what the Vedic culture does. But now just focusing back on this verse from Bhagavad Gita, it's helpful to understand our circumstance so that we can not just be moved by the waves of a river, but we can be detached from that whole movement of the waves of the river of time and step out of it and become situated in the consciousness of our eternal position. So I'm going to end and see if there's some discussion or comments or questions. Yes. Here comes a little microphone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the great class. My question is in relation, well, I have two questions.
Two, okay.
My first question is in relation to the enjoyer and the enjoyed, okay. The Purusha and Prakriti. And my question is, what are the feelings of the enjoyed? Does the enjoyed enjoys getting enjoyed by the enjoyer?
Yes.
Or is it just like impersonal, it doesn't exist, or it's just,
okay.
Is it only about the enjoyer? And if the enjoyed also feels joy being enjoyed, isn't it not also an enjoyer as well?
No. That was your first question.
My second
question. Let me do the first one. I just wanted to see if they put a ribbon on it and tie it up. Okay. What does it feel like to be the enjoyed? What it feels like in the position of yoga is it's in bhakti yoga specifically. There's the subject and there's the object. So the subject is us, the prakriti entity, and then there's enjoyment in seeing the object of enjoyment is enjoying. Subjectively, there's enjoyment, but the enjoyment is in the object of love. The object of enjoyment is enjoying, and that's a joy. That's a happiness. That's the happiness. And then in reverse, the position of Krishna as the enjoyer of the enjoyed, he wants to see us just like a father and a child of the father. The father is very happy seeing the child is happy. The happiness of the father is the happiness of the child. Now there's different roles and different functions between the two, but it's an exchange of happiness or exchange of love where the lover and the beloved enjoy one another in a relationship of love. So they're both enjoyers. But one is the subordinate, the other is the superior. To whom I direct my senses and my consciousness and my activities and my goals and my life, to the beloved. A relationship of love. Both are enjoyers.
So how can this little tiny jiva please the almighty Krishna?
Oh, he's very kind. He can accommodate you, no problem. His capacity knows no limit. And even you and I, each of us are tiny, tiny. We're part of him. He knows it. We've forgotten it, but he hasn't forgotten it. And when he sees us turning our desire or striving to bring happiness to our source, he's very happy. So in one sense, we're inconsequential because we're so tiny. But in another sense, we're part of the Supreme, and so that's consequential. His happiness increases by your making that connection with him. He's unlimited. So how can you increase the unlimited? Because he's already unlimited. But his capacity is also unlimited.
So I can have an effect on the unlimited?
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
And my second question is, the weird spirit, we're Satchitananda Vigraha, like Krishna.
Yeah.
And the Bhagavad Gita says that spirit, water cannot wet it, fire cannot burn it. It's untouched by the material energy.
Correct.
And, you know, we say that we are marginal energy, that, you know, we can and we cannot be illusion.
Yes, yes.
So how can I be spirit if I'm also able to be overcome by material energy? I sometimes feel...
Say it again slower. How can I be spirit as long as I'm doing what?
How can I be spirit if I'm able to be overcome by material energy? I don't feel like I'm spirit.
That's because you're covered.
But spirit can never be covered.
Oh. Spirit can be covered. Spirit can be covered by power, by illusory force, it appears to be, and therefore I identify with the covering. And because I identify with the covering, that's being covered, but not moistened by water, withered by wind. And that the soul is not affected by those material elements, but I identify with material elements. Too much. So exactly what's being said, let me just read it again from the purport. This is the proportionate to kind of language. The living entity, if he submits to this hearing process, will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature, and gradually and proportionately, he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. Proportionate to, or conversely, proportionate to my identification with matter, I experience being covered. But your question is, if I'm not influenced by these things, how can I be covered if I can't be influenced by these things? By illusion, I'm not. Just like, you know, a particle of gold is gold. It can be covered with mud or alloys in the gold. But then you bring the gold and remove the alloys and remove the coverings and the mud and the this and the that, and by fire, the pure gold emerges and the impurity is separated from it, because and that purity is still intact even when covered or in an alloyed condition. The gold isn't changed.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Any other thoughtful questions? I see a hand way over on the lady's side.
Hare Krishna. You were mentioning that bhakti yoga comes to be the apex of the yoga ladder, like that Krishna describes after Sankhya, Buddhi, Karma, Jnana, Dhyana. And then he says that, you know, the best form of meditation is,
yes,
bhakti.
That form of yoga. So, best form of yoga.
Right. So I was wondering, so how is bhakti? You said it's very natural. It's the best because it's very innate and natural to the soul.
Yeah.
Then how is that, you know, different compared to the other yogas, and why are they like
lesser,
not natural? Is it not natural to?
They're natural, but not complete.
Oh.
It's less than complete. So what's complete? What makes bhakti complete? It's where consciousness is fully, it's the same as what we were discussing over the weekend, it's fully absorbed. And there's to a degree absorbed, like, you know, let's say karma yoga, detached from the fruits and offering the fruits to the Supreme. That's nice. And it feels nice, that detachment from the entanglement of karma. What a relief. But it's not complete yet. And similarly, one can make statements about each of the other yoga systems. In fact, what makes them, to whatever degree that they're successful, there's some connection with the Supreme. There's some touch of bhakti in karma yoga. There's some touch of bhakti in gyan yoga. There's some touch of bhakti in dhyan or meditational yoga. But then it's when it's just bhakti, that's complete. And it's fully natural for the soul. You're pondering.
I was just wondering that, because in the nine limbs of bhakti, it contains Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam,
yeah,
Pada Sevanam. So all of that seems to somehow fall into the category of the previous types of yoga.
Yes.
So does that mean that bhakti actually incorporates all the other yogas into the practice of bhakti?
Not incorporates, but it's the culmination. So that you see, what you just said, the previous phrase that you said is what I said, which is the other systems of yoga incorporate some feature of, but it's incomplete. And what makes it complete is the fullness. And so it's not that for one who's practicing bhakti yoga, it's just fine, stay attached to the fruits of your work. No, that karma yoga principle is a subset of, it's included within the fullness.
Thank you.
Okay, back here, one of the other Matajis.
Thank you for your class. Oh, sorry. Thank you for your class.
Powerful speaker.
Sorry, yeah, I was so close. Regarding the enjoyer and the enjoyer.
Hold the microphone a little further away.
Yeah,
I think it may add better, much
okay.
better.
And I have an accent, so sorry.
No, your accent's fine.
So regarding the enjoyer and the enjoyed.
Yes.
It came to my mind the idea that in the spiritual world we actually are in yoga maya and we don't see the enjoyer and the enjoyed. We have this relationship which has become more natural.
Yes.
Isn't it? So we need this understanding for the purification process because eventually we are not going to know this and we are not going to see that so clearly, no? I'm trying to understand the enjoyer and the enjoyer.
Did you get what she said? I have bad hearing.
Okay, and I have an
but accent. And he has good hearing.
Okay.
So I sometimes ask him, but he couldn't follow.
Okay.
Try
again.
I'm sure it's a good one.
No, maybe not. But anyway, so in the spiritual world, we are covered by yoga maya, correct?
In the spiritual world, we're under the care of yoga maya, correct?
Yeah. So we don't see Krishna as the enjoyer, and we are the enjoyers.
Oh, we don't see like that, but we act like that. That's the consciousness, back to her question. It's the natural consciousness. He's the enjoyer, and we're trying to serve the enjoyer, and he is enjoying our service, and that's the relationship. That's the yoga-maya relationship.
But the gopis get angry at Krishna.
That's okay. You know. He enjoys it. He enjoys it. He does. And because it's not like, you know, it's love. It's a particular type of intimacy of love. Now, when those things happen in this world, it's not love. It's something else. Mm. But in the spiritual world, back to your question, it's yoga maya. It's love expressed by haughtiness. And Krishna likes. Mm. You know that?
No. Yeah, I was thinking that we are not super aware there of that aspect of it.
What we're aware is Krishna is my everything.
Mm. Mm.
And whatever pleases him.
Mm.
And that's the yoga maya that moves my heart, or the servant in the spiritual world, and Krishna likes. So whatever Krishna likes, I like. And that's the condition of what I like. That's, you know, his question. My happiness is his happiness. Supposing Krishna wants to something or other. Fantastic. Suppose, like Lord Chaitanya, supposing Krishna wants to trample me with his feet. Supposing Krishna wants to embrace me. Supposing Krishna wants to neglect me. Whatever he wants.
Thank you.
And so that the mood that he's the enjoyer. But it's yoga maya, it's not the other kind.
Thank you. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Yes, I see one hand, and I also see the hands of the clock. We're going to take one more question, and then we're going to say Hari Bol to everybody.
Maharaj, in the constitutional structure, how the soul is made, I know they're eternal, but still, There's no trace of Maya or illusory energy. It's pure Satchidananda. Where this idea to enjoy originated in the soul, is it the contact of the illusory, then desire came, or desire came first, then illusory secondary world manifested? And if you say, yes, secondary world manifested, then what, in the spiritual realm, spiritual world, there is no trace of Maya, so it cannot be the desire has to be there before.
Okay. You were here for that Bhagavatam class where the fall of the Jiva topic came up, right? Yes or no?
I don't remember.
You weren't here.
No.
The topic came up. And I said, I don't want to talk about it. But you're bringing it up, so I'll talk about it.
Okay.
And let me share with you, you'll be satisfied with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's answer. You may not be satisfied with my answer, but you'll be satisfied with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So for our newer people, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the grand spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. You can see his painting up on the wall, this Grihastha, yeah, right up there. So that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur, great acharya. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was prolific. He wrote 100 books. And in about 80 of those 100 books, he includes what he called Dasa Mula Tattva. Dasa means 10. Mula means root. Tattva means truths. 10 essential truths of Lord Chaitanya. And one of those 100 books was his own writing in English, little skinny book, Sri Chaitanya, His Life and Precepts. His life is a little mini summary of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and his precepts was this Dasamula. And in that Dasamula, he touches on your question. And his own writing in English was, don't ask the misleading question, which your question is misleading question. Don't ask the misleading question when the living entity was created and when the living entity was enthralled. Now, in the 10 essential teachings, it's some living entities are enthralled. Some living entities are captured by Maya. Some living entities are liberated, not captured by Maya. And then, so then he doesn't go into it. He just says the question itself is misleading. When the question is asked as if, which is your question, as if once upon a time, and it's not a once upon a time kind of phenomena. Once upon a time, the living entity untouched by the gunas and Maya and, you know, pristine. And then they looked at their watch and said, you know what? I want to be an enjoyer. Boop! Then they're in the material world, as if it's an event in time. He doesn't elaborate. But it's misleading to think of this and ask the question and ponder on it as if it's an event in time, because it's not an event in time. So my way of saying the same thing, and I'm going to end, is it's not a chronological event, because that's a misleading perception. It's an ontological event. Ontological event, fancy language, right? It actually happened, but it's not an event in time. There are such things as events that aren't in time. Yes. It's an ontological event. Misuse of free will. It's right in Bhagavad Gita, misuse of free will. So, I'm looking at the clock. The clock says we went 3 minutes over time. So I'm going to end, and then there's something next that's supposed to happen. That's prasadam, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, Who's going to announce prasadam and where everybody goes? Who's the announcer?
They know.
They know. Okay. Prasadam. Everyone, prasadam time. Hari Bol.
His Holiness Ramapad Swami Maharaj ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Samayata Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.
Good thing.